passionate instigator and dynamic problem solver, Dr. Kevin Ross Emery, the host of the Dr. Kevin Radio Show, will be taking you outside the box, behind the curtain, and identifying the load of BS we are fed every day. And now, Dr. Kevin.
Hello, 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 and welcome to this week's Dr. Kevin Show here on Om Times, where we change the world, wait for it, one Om at a time. So we want to welcome you to this week's edition. As you know, we are now a live call-in show. If you are interested in being part of tonight's conversation, call in at 202-570-7057. That's 202-570-7057. You can ask questions of me. You can ask questions of tonight's guests. You can share opinions and thoughts. If for some reason you don't want to be on the phone, you can come to facebook.com/mydrkevin. And when you get there, you will see pinned right to the top today's post, all the information about today's guest, including click links and all sorts of fun stuff. And you can post comments there. And when you post comments there, I will be monitoring that Facebook page and I will get those questions or those comments on air as long as they are appropriate. So as always, we start with my first little part of my segment, which is my hot topic. As we know, my hot topic may mean something that is making me feel all warm and fuzzy in the cockles of my heart, or it may have me hot under the collar. You know, I usually go out into the news for this. I usually see some story that's going on and I try to share it. I try to share inspirational and hopeful stories and I try to pick at things that I don't feel are right in the world. Tonight I'm doing a little something different. So tonight's guest is listening to this and going, oh God, what have I got myself into? But I know that he can handle it. Tonight's hot topic for me is I've just had it with hate. I've actually had to jump off some mailing lists that I was on, some emails that I was giving, even if they were people who were supporting my vision and my idea of where I'd like to see this country go, because I just couldn't take the hate anymore. I just said, I can't take it. It's all negative. It's all about ruining this person or going after that person or that is horrible. And even if I agree with the person, I just can't do it anymore. I didn't get a chance to launch it yet, but unless it's already out there and I haven't seen it, if it is, I'm going to start launching a hashtag and really promoting and pushing a hashtag that says negate hate. Because anytime you have a double negative, it means it's positive. And the reason I say negate hate is it's the way they suck us in and leave us in an us and them situation where nobody wins but the people that are in power. The people that are in power, whether they're Republicans or Democrats, whether they're lobbyists or corporate bigwigs, whatever side of the fence they sing their song on, as long as we're staying at each other's throats, they get to stay in power. They get power, they get money, they get prestige, and they get to screw over the American people. And bottom line is, they all screw over the American people, period. As long as lobbyists and corporate entities are getting a vote and have more votes because they have larger checkbooks than the average American, no matter what color of the fence they think they sit on, are getting screwed. And that's just the fact. So I'm going to invite people to start doing what I'm going to start doing on both my TV shows and on my radio shows when anyone should stumble into the soup of politics, or I sometimes have people running for office on my TV show and on my radio show, is don't tell me anything negative or bad about your opponent or the other party or what you think. All I want to hear is, what are you going to do and why are you going to do it? And if you can't frame that in a positive way, then I don't care what it is. I'm not voting for you anymore, period. I am going to keep winnowing it down until I can find people that can just stand on issues and just friggin' answer the question. And I'm just finding they don't answer the question. All they do is point fingers. And as they're pointing their fingers with one hand, they're robbing you of money and rights and services and everything else with the other hand, no matter what they're saying. So my new thing is negate hate. If you're going to be hateful, I don't want to hear from you. If you're going to be hateful, I'm not going to support you. Just tell me what you're going to do. Be positive. Answer my questions. And let me tell you, the last politician I had on squiggled in the seat a little bit because I wouldn't let the questions not get answered. And I'm going to hopefully get some more of those on my radio show. But somehow they don't like people that hold them to the facts. So that's my hot topic today. That being said, I'm going to introduce tonight's guest and then let them comment on the hot topic, which can be anything from they think that I got it right and I'm all hot, or they can think I'm full of hot air. Either one is okay. I don't ask anyone to agree with me. I'm okay with anybody choosing to be wrong. Tonight's guest is Tony Buda. I was chatting with Tony before he came in, and I didn't ask him how to pronounce his last name. I look at it, and maybe it's my spiritual leanings. I go, Buddha, but maybe Bode. So he's going to come in here, and he's going to correct that for me, and I will not be insulted. Author of Profitability. Now, that's spelled P-R-O-P-H-E-T, ability. That's part of what grabbed my attention to Tony, was that he put profit in instead of what we think of profit, but profitability. The revealing story of why companies succeed, fail, or bounce back. So Tony has a BA in history with a minor in economics from Christendom College and an MBA from the University of Tennessee. Since 2000, Tony's been deeply involved with building customer behavior, analytic practices from the ground up within companies. Maybe we can send him to Washington, D.C. Maybe he can teach those people how to give good customer service in Congress. We'll ask him that, because they're given lousy customer service now. This often includes selection and training of teams to the creation of new analysis methods and tools that will allow companies to understand not just what customers are doing, but why they are doing it. Since 2009, he's run a customer experience consulting firm. Tony, again, Buda, that's how I'm pronouncing it right now, International. New book, Profitability, The Revealing Story of Why Companies Succeed, Fail, or Bounce Back. Tony, are you there?
I am here.
How badly did I pronounce your last name?
Well, you know, I am honored you called me Buddha. That is an honor. The incorrect but common pronunciation is Bodo, B-O-D-O-H, the two long O's. And it's actually misspelled French. The Germans got a hold of it during the war of the Civil War, War of Northern Aggression, depending on where you are in the country. And they changed the spelling for us. So I take it my ancestors were illiterate and couldn't write.
Oh. So that still doesn't tell me. You're sounding like a politician here. How do you pronounce it?
How do it's you Bodo. Pronounce it? That's how we commonly pronounce it. It's Bodo.
Bodo. Okay. Yeah. So I'll try to stop calling you Tony the Buddha.
I've been called worse. So,
haven't we all? So first comment on the hot topic, and then we'll move into our putting you through the Dr. Kevin grill questions.
Yeah, I have to completely agree with you on this. The hate has grown tremendously, and no one really benefits from the hate. Now, as you said, there are people, you know, they get their hands in our pockets and that. But, you know, I've had this conversation. I've got a 15-year-old daughter and a 13-year-old daughter, and my 15-year-old daughter has really, you know, taken this idea of understanding the idea of this echo chamber like Facebook and Twitter and how we get caught up because the algorithms keep refeeding us the same things and then we just spiral out of control. And so I'm with you. I have a wide range of people that I connect with on both sides of the aisle, conservative and liberal. It doesn't matter to me because I want to hear really good arguments and discussions. But when they get to the point of spewing hate, that's when I cut them off. And I think we ought to do that as a society, not if we disagree with them, but it's the emotion that they want to trigger in other people and that they try to trigger in other people that is just, it's out of control. And it really is not good for society as a whole. We wouldn't want our kids raised that way. So why would we do it or accept it from other people?
Yeah, and you know, and part of that is when we get into triggering emotionality, Oftentimes it's because we're trying to avoid the topic.
Absolutely. And as we go into this hate mode, we're probably in a fearful state. We're trying to trigger other people because we're afraid that we might not be right or they might have a better argument. So we move to that emotional state. At least that's my experience of it. And I've been studying human emotion for almost 20 years now. And what I've learned is that while we react in a situation, we're wired to react. We're emotional beings that occasionally think, as economist Daniel Kahneman says. And I look at that and say, we also have this ability to choose. We may react and feel hate. We may react and feel love. We may react and feel joy. But we can also choose to feel those emotions. And so I think when we got to build these alert systems in our body, so when we feel the hatred or feel the desire to be hateful, that we stop ourselves, we program ourselves to pause, take a breath, and step back from the situation and reevaluate.
And I can't agree, and now with you, I can't agree more. So now we're even. Is that we, and I teach this to my clients, and which is that recognize when you're responding versus you're reacting. The minute you feel the energy that says, I'm reacting, stop, breathe it through, and ask yourself some questions. What am I really upset about? What part of this is mine? Where's my ownership in this? Why am I giving this much power away that I want to react? When if I get really quiet, I can take ownership, I can have self-awareness, and then I can respond, and I may still respond in a way that somebody is, I feel somebody has stepped over a line, crossed a boundary, has been inappropriate. I can call somebody on something, but I can do it from a clean, centered place, and it doesn't escalate it, it brings it down. So, I think it's
Absolutely.
important.
Absolutely.
So now that we both have decided each other is fabulous because we've agreed on something and we'll continue to think that till we disagree on something. Let's move. I don't know if you listen to any of my shows in advance. If not, then you'll appreciate the humor. If you have, I'm surprised you actually came on. So Tony, the first question that I like to ask, and we've got about 5 minutes before we go to break, but we can extend into the next segment if we need to. Where do you want to take my listeners outside the box? This is when you want to stretch their comfort zone. Where do you want to introduce something to them that can help expand them?
Well, I think it's interesting the topic you brought up tonight because I was going to head in that direction to some extent. And I think where I really want to stretch people is in this culture, as I study customer experience and really dive deep into it, one of the things I've seen over and over again is that we seem to believe that companies owe us a good experience. Now, from the perspective of that I'm buying something, I absolutely agree with that. But I think as a culture, we expect to be able to react with happiness, with joy, with delight, instead of stepping back and saying, well, how can I choose to be happy, to learn, to grow, even if things aren't going right? How can I choose to be the better person in this scenario? Instead of reacting and yelling at my server because they got something wrong or yelling at the person on the phone in the customer service queue. And I think really stretching people to think about how are you reacting or how are you responding, as you said, is where I want to take them tonight because I think it's important for people to realize that the person on the other side of the phone is a person. And they probably didn't create the problem that you're facing. They probably are there doing their job the best they can with the policies and procedures in place. And the company does have a responsibility to treat you right and to give you more than a fair offer. They have to give you, they should be giving you something that will move you to admire them, to bring them to awe, to admiration. But that person on the other end of the line or the person you deal with on the front line, they're not the cause of the problem often. And I think we as a society need to step back from that reaction. And as you said, I think it's well stated. Pause and have a calculated, clear response to them where we tell them, this is what I want, this is what I need, this is what'll make it right. And if you can't do it, that's okay. Then give me someone who can. And I'll tell you that I have learned to do that after studying, you know, customer experience. I begin to change how I interact when I'm working with customer, you know, customer service professionals or servers in the restaurant. And I start to do this myself now, and I find that I get much better service because I'm not blaming them. And I think that's part of this whole, the hate has gone too far. Don't blame someone else. How do you help them take responsibility, and how do you move forward?
Well, you know, there's a couple of interesting things there that I'd like to comment on, and we're probably going to take this right into the next part of the segment because you definitely are hitting on something that I find a much needed subject to be talked about, just like we're talking about it. And the first thing is that every time I hear somebody that has complained or wants to complain about a customer service rep or go to a boss or do thing or just be really bad, one of the first questions I like to ask them is, when was the last time you asked to speak to a manager or asked to speak to somebody when somebody did something really good?
That is a fantastic question. I would argue that less than probably 10% of the people, it probably far less than that even, have ever done that. And I think we need to do that more. You're absolutely right.
I do that all the time. Literally, I have asked when I've gotten great customer service to speak to the person's supervisor to tell them that this is a really good employee and this is the kind of employee they want to have. I always go out of my way to compliment. I've stopped at a store and asked to speak to the store manager, and you see them walk over and they're going, you can see the look on the manager's face like, oh my God, what do my employee do now? And trying to smile. And I'll be like, I just needed to tell you that you just had a really good experience in this store, and I wanted you to know. That's the music. We'll be back in just a minute with, I'm going to say Tony the Booter again, Tony Bodo, author of Profitability.
Conscious Media for Conscious Minds, Om Times. Have you ever wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free today at ascendinghearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
Tune in to the Practical Intuitive Mind, Body, Spirit for the Real World with me, host Robin Fritz, Mondays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 Eastern. I'll cover personal and business intuition, animal communication, mediumship, space clearing, past life regression, shamanic insights, energy healing, soul choice, and more. All to help you tap your own intuitive and healing skills. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Hi, this is New Age Grammy winner Paul Avgerinos. Thanks for listening to Om Times Radio, and please support my peaceful healing music with a purchase at iTunes, Amazon, or wherever you shop for fine music. Just put my name into the search engine. Paul Avgerinos, A, V like Victor, G like George, E-R-I-N-O-S. You can also visit me at roundskymusic.com. Thanks for listening, and I'm wishing you the brightest of blessings.
To protect his home and family from disaster, Steve used courage, wisdom, and his camera phone.
That should do it.
Way to go, Steve! By simply taking digital pictures of his family's important documents, Steve can always have them stored safely online, no matter when disaster strikes. Learn other simple ways to protect your home and family before a natural disaster at ready.gov. That's ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Dr. Kevin Show here on Ohm Times, where we're changing the world. Wait for it. One ohm at a time. Come be part of the conversation tonight with Tony Budo. I still pronounced it wrong. I'm just going to keep on calling him Tony the Buddha. Author of Profitability, The Revealing Story of Why Companies Succeed, Fall, or Bounce Back. And come check it out on facebook.com/mydrkevin. And you'll see all of the links to Tony's website, his Facebook page, everything. And you can leave comments or you can call in and be part of the conversation. If you don't like the way the world is going, then stand up and do something about it. Speak out. Be part of the conversation. You can do so at 202-570-7057. So, Tony, before I get completely disrespectful, pronounce your last name for me again. Our conversations were so interesting, it blew it right out of my head.
That's good to hear. Bodo, yes.
Bodo, okay. I wasn't so far off.
No, it's okay.
Bodo, so Tony, yeah, I think it's really important. And, you know, I think that the message, one of the messages that, and I'm sure this comes up in your work, you know, trying to consult with companies about how to be more... it's funny, I want to call it organic with customer service, and probably not a word you would use, but for some reason that's how what I think of it as, is if you don't like all the negativity in the world, be more positive. Thank people when they do things well, send off the things, and then if you do have a complaint, and you know, you said you made a very interesting comment before we took our break, which is, you know, ask the person, can you take care of this? And I recently had a customer service thing where I said, I'm not upset with you. You do not make these rules. My question is, can you do anything to make this right? Do you have the ability to make me happy? Can you give me what I'm asking for? Because if you can't, please don't waste my time. Let me speak to somebody who can. And the funny thing is, for the one of the very first times, and I've said that many times, I actually was in a conversation and they really resisted passing me up the line. And I had to go back to, you're telling me what I already know. What you're not telling me is, can you fix this? And finally, the customer service rep had to admit that they did not have the power to make me happy. But I almost felt like they got punished for passing people up to their supervisors. Have you found that? Are companies doing that now? Are they actually asking their frontline people to not pass people up to people that can make decisions? Or did I just have an odd experience?
No, you're actually experiencing something that is unfortunately rather common. And there's two different examples I can use where I see this happening. The first one is where a company, what's in the industry is called first contact resolution. So you call in, the first person that has contact with you is the person who's supposed to resolve your issue. Now, theoretically, that makes great sense because none of us like being passed around and handed to the next person to have to re-explain the issue, and 20 minutes later, another person have to re-explain the issue. But where it falls apart is when they take it so literally that I can't let you off the phone until I solve your problem, even if I don't have the authority, the knowledge, the capability to do so. And they will get punished sometimes, or you know, their metrics will go bad and they'll get in trouble for it, written up or fired potentially because they've got bad metrics. The other place where it happens, and I had a client, I won't say the name because they're actually a very good company, but they had a process in place that was not good. And it was in the process of canceling your relationship with them. They would do everything they could to keep you. So if you called up and said, I want to cancel XYZ, they would say, well, let's see what I can do to help you. And you'd already made the decision as a consumer. You don't want to have to rethink everything. It actually is kind of insulting to have to rethink and explain to this other person why I made a decision. And with that particular company, we eventually got them to move because I found one representative who had this method where he would agree with them and say, okay, let me start the cancellation process. And as he got into the process, he'd start asking them natural questions. And I like your word organic, so I'm going to use it here. He would organically calm them down by agreeing with them, to say, yes, I know the product's expensive, or I know XYZ, you know, he would find a way to agree with them and not lie. And then it would open them up and they would relax. And then he'd say, so tell me more about what's happening as I'm going through doing the work here of canceling it. What's happening? And they would become much more amenable. And often he would actually be able to get them to say, you know, he would ask them, if I find a way to save you money or address the issue you have, would you be willing to reconsider? And 9 out of 10 times they said, yeah, I would definitely do that. And he would either try to help them right then, or he would get their number and he would call them back later if he could resolve the issue. And he was very successful at that. Now, I will tell you, until we were able to change the metrics, he had the highest save rate. He was about 2 to 3 times higher for saving customers than anyone else in the company. But he had really long talk times, and he had callbacks, more callbacks than other people. So his metrics didn't look good because of what they were tracking and trying to enforce. And so I think that's where companies really have to step back and say, what's the spirit versus what's the law? And how do we really want to handle this? What is the ideal experience we want people to have?
Ha! I love it. And I have to tell you what it makes me think of, because I have a lot of Jewish past lives, and they come up. And they come up in conversations, and sometimes I say things, and to some of my friends who were raised, who are Jewish or ended up becoming Jewish, and I'll say things, and they'll look at me and they'll go, oh, have you studied? Have you got, and I'll be like, no, that just comes to me. And the reason I bring all of that up is because one of the huge debates that happens and still happens today, I think, in yeshivas is the spirit of the law versus the letter of the law. And
yes.
Do we know what the difference is between the spirit of the law and the letter of the law? This has been argued in yeshivas for thousands of years. And I really think that today's education system handicaps a lot of our people, a lot of people that come out of public education as it stands today, with little to no critical thinking skills. So they only know how to follow the letter, because the spirit of the law is interpretive, and you have to have good critical thinking skills to be able to understand it and apply it appropriately. Thoughts?
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Not just because you're the host. I absolutely love where you're going with this, because I have a daughter who is vegan, and she's chosen to be vegan for a number of reasons, but it's values-based. And recently, about 3 weeks ago, she approached me and she said, Dad, I think I might be willing to eat clams and mussels and oysters. And I kind of looked at her strange, because I'm like, okay, those are animals. You know that, right? And she said, yes, but she said all the research, scientific research out there tells me that they can't feel anything. And one of the premises for me being a vegan is not to hurt animals. And so therefore, if they can't feel pain, I believe it would be okay. It's according to my values that I could do that. And I was blown away at the level of critical thinking that it takes to evaluate the values, not just say I'm a vegan and go on the pathway, but to really evaluate what that means and be willing to stand up if someone were to say, well, that's not true veganism, and have an explanation as to why. I was really blown away by that. And I say, I don't see that level of thinking in most adults today.
Years ago, when I used to work for Dartmouth College, and when I worked for Dartmouth College, I got to take classes for free, and who wouldn't? I mean, who in their right mind wouldn't, if, you know. And I took a critical thinking class, and this was back in the 80s. And the professor for the critical thinking class said he was so concerned, because here at Dartmouth College, who's supposed to be bringing in the best and the brightest from across the country, an Ivy League school, and that sometimes the students, in order to get a passing grade, had to take his class at least twice, and if they wanted an A, they had to take it 3 times, because they came in with so a little ability to even understand the concept. And these were coming from the top private schools in the country, and they didn't even get the concept of critical thinking skills. And that was 30 years ago. How scary is that?
Well, I think it comes back to your hot topic, too. It's absolutely frightening, because the why do we express hate, or why do we want to cause hate in other people? It's because we can't think critically enough to have an argument and remain calm and have a discussion. And if someone challenges our belief system, we have to attack them. You know, we're programmed to do that in many ways. And we don't teach our kids, either in school or out of school. I mean, I even put on the parents. A lot of parents don't teach their kids critical thinking skills. And so I think we have to hold everyone to a higher standard across the board to do that.
Well, one of my, for lack of a better word, and you're a businessman, so you understand when I say branding. some people go, what are you talking about? Is this quote, fear, self-worth, self-esteem issues, unresolved anger, powerlessness, and ignorance are all consistent key ingredients when people spew hate from the cauldron of hate.
I'll have to absorb that one. It's good. I'll have to absorb that one.
I'll put it down underneath our conversation. And you can look at it if you want, but it's what we're talking about. You know, when you look at it, hate, either there's ignorance, there's anger, there's powerlessness. And that's why people beat up customer service reps, because they can, because they feel like the world is beating them up, because they feel powerless, because they don't feel like their voice gets heard in DC, in Washington. They don't feel like that they can fight back. Their way of life is disappearing, or their raises aren't keeping up with the cost of living, or they had to get a second job or a third job. Yes, the unemployment rate is lower than it's been in a while, but how many of those people is it because people have to have three jobs to make a single income comparative to 20 years ago to have the same lifestyle? You got to look at all the factors and not the sound bites.
So, yeah, and I agree with that completely. The learned helplessness, I think that was Dr. Martin Seligman came up with that term, learned helplessness in our society. You know, I can't do it. I don't know how to solve the problem. Someone else is in control. The moment we feel that way, we just give up or we attack.
Yep. And that's why we have so many apathetic, and the apathetic are now waking up and going, what's going on? But my question is, so first of all, where did your child get her critical thinking skills? Because I can almost guarantee that school wasn't teaching them to her, unless you're in one of the few really good, possibly private school systems, but they're rare, that are teaching critical thinking skills. So where did your child get them? And how can a parent teach them to a child when we're now two or three generations or more away from parents that got taught them? If you don't have good critical thinking skills, how can you give them to your child? Thoughts?
So the first part of that, my daughter went to a good Catholic elementary school, and I think they had some good critical thinking skills there. But I will tell you that I did really focus on that as part of, as she and her sister were growing up, really getting them to think critically about things. And we have some really good debates about topics in the news, or even conversations about how they're being raised. You know, we are willing to have those open conversations and critical conversations about it. The second part of that, how do we get back to, how do we teach people who are two and three generations removed? It's not easy. I mean, that's an understatement. But I think we can each take a step in that direction. And one way to do it is if we just remember to pause. When we feel the emotion moving us, I think if we begin to pause and say, well, let me take a breath and let me think about why I feel how I feel. We don't ask enough why questions in to ourselves, I think, and say, why am I feeling that way? What triggered this, and how would I rather feel? And I think if we start moving down that path of asking ourselves the why, not in an incriminating way or a way we need to feel guilty because of what we're feeling, but really trying to seek out who are we being in this moment, and is that person we're being who we actually want to be? And so it comes back to really understanding your self-concept or self-image and asking yourself a better set of questions like, who is it I really want to be? And how would that person react to this situation or to these circumstances or these conditions?
Well, you know, one of the things that I think is a great, and we still got two more questions to get to, but this conversation's too good to not continue with it. And if the questions go away, they go away. I'm flexible. We have in schools, we have standardized testing, which came about from the, you know, Every Child Left Behind Act, which is what I like to call it. Which is a parallel to matrix in a business that is only measuring a two-dimensional reality. Your guy had long phone calls, but he saved more sales. But the bean counter person only looked at the metrics. How damaging has our obsession with metrics and squeezing out the last penny for the shareholder at the cost of decent living wages for the employee? How much does that hurt customers, companies that are trying to do customer service?
It's actually created a tremendous, tremendous loss of value for companies and for the customers of those companies. One of the areas of specialty that I study is how do you bring what we call qualitative and quantitative measures together? So as an example, a typical survey will ask you, let's say 1 through 5, 5 being excellent, how was your experience? Or how did you like your server? Or how was your meal? Whatever it may be. And most people just look at that number. Did we get a 5? Did we get a 10? Did we get a 1? And they have this artificial concept in their mind of we need 70 or 80 or 90% of the scores have to be 5s. And what I step back and say is, well, let's also ask them to describe their experience, to tell us about what happened. Because and what's interesting is that if you begin to understand the language that people use when they give you a five out of five as an example, like on TripAdvisor, the language that they use reveals something about that experience. And what we have actually discovered is that when someone gives you a 5 out of 5 on an excellent experience, they're actually saying, I admire this about you or your brand or your company or your employees, or I am in awe of something that you did, or I'm grateful for what you did. And so I actually call that the admiration equation. There's a way to trigger those. But when you get below a 5-star review and you get to a 4-star review, what ends up happening is people are saying, it was really good, but. And then if you progress all the way down to the 3s, in that case, you're getting, well, I got a fair deal. I got what I paid for. And then if you go down to the 1s, then people are complaining, you know, it's a really bad experience, right? And they feel like they've lost something. And why I share that is because if you understand that a 5 is really about admiration, what happens is we've actually seen where companies that trigger the 5-star experience, those customers will spend between about 10% more up to 250% more in that transaction. And long term, if you look at their lifetime value, which is a fancy term for how much money they spend with you over time, they actually spend far more than a customer who gives a 4-star review or a 3-star review, much less a 1-star review. So when we try to go after just the metrics of getting things done fast or let's get things done efficiently, and we forget about the other aspects of humanity. And I lean heavily on positive psychology here. And, you know, happiness is not just one-dimensional. It's not just about feeling good, you know, positive emotion. It also can include engagement. It can include relationships and deep connection with another human being or something meaningful or accomplishing and mastering something. I mean, you know, if you look at the call center environment, and they're trying to move everyone fast. Well, what if I just pause for a moment and build a human connection with you and ask you about your day? Well, I could make the experience a lot better with a few seconds of conversation with a person. And that person can say, wow, that was really friendly. I'm going to come back to this company because they got friendly employees. And that's literally what happens.
We will be right back with Tony Bodo, also known as Tony the Buddha, author of Profitability, here on the Dr. Kevin Show.
The Real Conscious Connection, OM Times Radio, IOM FM. The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Hi, I'm Kelly Fox, host and astrologer of The Astrology Show. Each week, I'll give you access to the current transits, which are a valuable tool that provide astrological information to help unlock the potential each of us has. Understanding the stars can help steer us in the right direction to make better informed choices. So if you're wondering what's going to happen in your week ahead, be sure to tune in to The Astrology Show for guidance, Mondays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
Hi, this is recording artist and composer Yuval Ron, inviting you to a voyage through the chakras. A new double album of guided meditations to transform your life. A sublime musical medicine for nourishing inner peace and reaching to your higher virtues. Get it now at metamindfulnessmusic.com. M-E-T-T-A mindfulnessmusic.com.
911, what is your emergency?
My kid shot himself.
All right, where's the wounds?
911, what's your emergency?
Please help. My son shot his brother.
911, what is your emergency?
911, please state your emergency.
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns.
It wasn't locked.
Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Hello and welcome back to the Dr. Kevin Show here on OM Times. Interesting. We have today Tony Bodo, who I'm calling Tony the Buddha, but Tony Bodo, author of Profitability, the Revealing Story of Why Companies Succeed, Fail, or Bounce Back. Call in and be part of the conversation at 202-570-7057 or come to Dr. Kevin to facebook.com/mydrkevin like the page because I'm a likable guy and share your comments, your thoughts, your ideas, and we will share them on air. Tony, you still there?
I am still here.
I have not driven you away yet, huh? I've tried hard. No. So we have a mutual friend slash acquaintance, I see, as I posted something on Twitter on break. Mary Morrissey.
Yes. Mary, I studied, I still study Mary's work. I studied under Mary starting in, 2008. And she was actually one of my personal coaches for close to 8 or 9 years. Worked closely with her every single week.
Yeah, I know Mary through a variety of different connections. I can't say we're close, obviously. She'd have to stop and think if you mentioned my name, probably. We had connections through a church I belonged to, and then we also taught at the same organization, that CEO Space. I was on faculty there. I go on and off faculty there, but I've been on and off faculty there since the early 2000s It's an MBA level boot camp for entrepreneurs. And Mary came in on one or two different forums and taught at the same time I did. So
yes,
again, passing
a
ships.
Great place. Yes. Yeah.
So you, so you're, did I meet you at CEO Space or were we not there at the same time?
You know, we may have crossed over. I don't know if I've met you there. I'm actually on faculty. I've taught there once. I was actually supposed to be there this week, but I had some other commitments that things that came up. But actually, that is where I first met Mary as well, back in 2007. So we may have overlapped and just not realized we met each other there.
Yeah, because I would have been on faculty at 2007, and I was at the I taught all five forums that year.
Well, I'm sure we met then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I've been like, I think I've been on faculty off and on since 2006. I think I was there like every year, but after a while, you can't do five forums a year teaching and have a crazy business all at the same time. At some point, you run out of time.
Yep.
So interesting. So customer service. So I'm going to ask you this question, which is the second of the three questions, and we're not even going to bother with the last question, which is where you want to take my listeners behind the curtain. And when I ask that question, I mean, where do you want to expose them to a truth that has been generally misrepresented, where we're basically, it's been spun so often or it's been so convoluted that we really don't understand the truth of what the situation is. But before you do that, you have to pass the quiz. Do you know the quiz?
Okay, we'll give it a try.
From what movie came Ignore the Man Behind the Curtain?
I am glad I listened to a few other episodes of your show. That would be The Wizard of Oz.
There you go. And you know why I always quote that? Because it was Toto that exposed who the wizard really was. Leave it to the dog. Love dogs.
Absolutely.
Their loyalty will, and their ability to ferret out the truth, the difference between the sham, the scam, and the real deal. So what real deal do you want to, or what scam or sham do you want to expose and tell us what the real deal is?
Well, the one I think that I'd focus on tonight is really understanding happiness. I mean, we've been talking about emotions this whole show, so I'm just going to stay in that genre right there. I think we have been taught and programmed that happiness is all about this feeling good, maybe joy, maybe pleasure. And there's so much more to happiness. I mean, over the last 20 years, if you really want to dive into it, there has been some tremendous scientific studies on what is happiness and what drives happiness. So most people think, I've got to be successful and then I'll be happy. And so they get the whole equation backwards because they spend their whole life trying to become successful. They reach the end and they never really achieved happiness. And what we know from the science of happiness now is that happiness is a choice. And if we choose to be happy, we actually will tend to be more successful, both in the short and in the long term, because the effect it has on the brain, if you are slightly more positive, as an example, what happens is you can actually see more physically, you can see more, your peripheral vision improves, and you can actually think better. Doctors are something like 19% better at diagnosing and faster at diagnosing when they're in a slightly positive state of mind. Salespeople can sell maybe 35 or 37% more when they're in a positive state of mind. And so when I talk about happiness, it's not just this feeling good or not just positivity, but it really dives into what I mentioned just before the break. There's five elements, then, and each of us may seek them differently. So as an example, you have positive emotion, the pleasure, the feeling good. But you might also have engagement or flow. And if you look to the X Games and those extreme athletes, they're trying to put themselves into a state of flow so that they can achieve something amazing. And when they're in that state, it feels really good to them. Then you've got relationships, deep relationships. Some people want to have deep relationships and deep connection with other people, but they may not seek happiness as we would commonly call it, or the joy, but they want that connection with another person, even if that connection is deeply painful, because as we've all probably heard, love hurts sometimes. Then you've got meaning. There are people that sacrifice so much joy and that so that they can do something meaningful in the world, so they can leave a legacy, so they can impact the world in such a positive way. And then there's achievement or accomplishment or mastery. And there are people that will go out of their way to learn how to master something. I mean, think about what's the value of sitting at a piano and learning how to play the piano and master a concerto if you're not going to be a professional piano player. You know, it's illogical to do so, but it's because it brings a level, achieving that for its own sake brings a level of happiness to people. So I think if we help people understand that happiness is not just feeling good, it could be mastering something, it could be the grit that's involved with practicing something over and over just to reach an end state that is where you have become someone more. So I would say that's the load of crap that we've been fed again and again, is we don't understand what happiness is, and we don't understand the effect that if we do move ourselves to the state of happiness and choose to be there, what effect it's going to have on the rest of our life and on the world as a whole.
You really, you know, I'm going to have you train all my guests when they come on the show. You jump from the second question to the third question, which means you really did read everything and you listened to some shows and you did your homework. And that's why we're having such a great interview, is because you came in prepared. And I thank you for that, because I'll tell you, there's nothing worse than when I ask the question and somebody goes, oh, that's a really good question. Let me think about it. Dead air. So you jump questions on me. That's great. You gave us what you thought was a load of crap. I think there's a lot to what you're saying there. Now, are you familiar with the Malcolm Gladwell
yes.
stuff about mastery? That mastery comes after 10,000 hours of doing something.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree? Disagree?
I have mixed opinions on that, based on science. So the level of mastery does require an intense, focused effort. It's not just 10,000 hours of doing something again and again, but it's the intentional, focused effort where you try to improve over and over and over again. And yes, it does take many thousands of hours. However, and I've learned this in my own life, my own career, because I could go back and kind of navigate you through what I've done. But rather than give you my resume, what I have learned to do is I ask myself a question when I'm jumping into a new area and say, how can I use what I know already and master a new level? And so it could be an entirely different area. So as an example, early in my career, I had never actually used Excel or never done analytics or anything else. But I walked into a job and was given a job to be head of marketing analytics for a company. And when I asked the person who hired me, I said, okay, why did you hire me? Because I clearly don't have the qualifications. And they said, it's because I know you know how to learn. And so I think the critical thing is you have to master the skill of learning. If you do that, it's not going to take you 10,000 hours to master something else.
Well, see, and there's the rub, which is, I've always looked at that and looked at the difference between 10,000 unique hours versus 10,000 hours of something that is applicable to what you're trying to master.
Yeah, the latter is the approach that I look at, and I try to figure out how can I take what I already know, what I've already invested so much time and energy into, and how do I leverage it? I try to teach other people to do that as well.
And you know what we call that, right? Another name for that? Critical thinking skills.
I was figuring you were going there. Yes.
Before we got a couple more minutes, but I know the way we're talking that music's going to show up. I want to say one more time, I am on with Tony Bodo, and that is B-O-D-O-H, author of Profitability, The Revealing Story of Why Companies Succeed, Fail, or Bounce Back. You can find out more about him at his website, which is Tony Buddha, again, Bodo, which again is BODOH.com, or his Facebook.com/ Tony Bodo International. And you can catch him on LinkedIn at Tony Bodo, Twitter at Tony Bodo, and Instagram at Tony Bodo. You're just like me. Everything's at My Dr. Kevin.
Exactly.
The branding.
Keep it easy.
You go anywhere, and if I'm on there, you'll see and put in My Dr. Kevin, I will show up. So I love it. I love that you do that. I think that's great. So, you know, the question, I'm going to put this out to you because you're in a position of influence. You know, the one question that I would really love a survey to ask me
that?
I think would tell the whole story, especially if you're dealing with people who solve problems. If you had another problem, would you want to work with this person again?
If you had another problem, would you want to work with this person again? That's a really good question.
Because one of my largest frustrations is I find somebody that's really good to solve a problem. I call back in, I get somebody different. Their skill level is way low, and I feel like I'm starting over again or whatever. That's the question that companies need to be asking. Thank you for being on. Tony, you should come back and play again. I think we have a lot more conversations we could have. We'd love to have you back.
Absolutely. Love to be back. Thank you.